from theunce.com. This is the Unce Podcast, featuring artist interviews, unreleased tracks, and previews of the biggest events in electronic music. Available every week at theunce.com. Nobody can do me like this. Hello and welcome to the Unce Podcast. I'm your host, Anand Harsh. My guest today is Tommy Dash, better known as Schism. The UK dubstep sensation actually got his start spinning drum and bass in the underground clubs before blowing up in the big bass movement. He and his partner Nick Sadler also head up one of the biggest dubstep labels out there right now, Never Say Die. They just released a jam-packed compilation album late last month that features Freestylers, 501, Foreign Beggars, Skeptics, Flux Pavilion, and more. Schism, along with Dodge and Fusky, are currently on a US and Canada tour in support of the compilation. They're hitting New York tonight and cruising through Orlando, Boston, San Francisco, Denver, Seattle, Portland, LA, San Diego, and more before the tour concludes. Full information is online at wewillneversaydie.com. Let's get to the interview. So you're a couple weeks into the Never Say Die record release tour in the U.S. and Canada. How have the dates been so far? I imagine this past weekend was crazy with Starscape and EDC Vegas.
Yeah, it's been a real intense start to the tour, actually. Like, we've been, unfortunately, we don't really get to choose our routing, so we've been zigzagging all over the place. You know, we started off in L.A., and then we went to Austin, and then up to Canada, and then back down again, and then this weekend, Dodge and Fusky, who I'm touring with, been off to Vegas while I did Starscape in Baltimore, and then now, right now, I'm in Fort Lauderdale. So it's like, you know, you don't have any time to get used to where you are at all. It's just, you wake up in a strange bed every day. It's like, where the hell am I, having to remind yourself where you are? But it's been great. The shows have been great. Been really busy. The music's been going down wicked. And yeah, American crowds for the type of music that what we do is probably, you know, it's one of our favorite places to play.
Absolutely, absolutely. Going from the Midwest to the Southeast and up to the Northeast and West Coast and Canada dates, are you getting the sense that crowds are different, or throughout America and Canada are people generally the same because, you know, the internet and everybody's listening to the same stuff anyway?
Yeah, I don't think it really matters where you are anymore. Like you said, the internet, it's made the world a much smaller place. You know, if something's out there online, people know it. So generally people kind of, you know, if it's a big tune, people will know it, you know. People generally know, like, about the DJs they're going to see. I think some crowds are definitely, like, the more younger crowds that we played to see for the 16-plus shows and stuff like that, they obviously kind of slightly less educated in the roots of the music. So when you kind of play something that's not, like, an obvious current top 10 dubstep tune, they look a bit confused sometimes, or like something that's a bit different from the norm. But like, generally the vibe's been the same. I think, I did a big tour like this last year, and I've noticed that the crowds are more responsive this time to not just the dubstep but the different genres that have come through. Like Moonbaton and Moonbacore has come a long way since last year.
Sure.
And you know, I like to throw a bit of that into my sets, and I play a bit of electro, and you know, I even throw in some, like, you know, rock and hip hop and drum and bass, because I'm, you know, that's kind of my past and my musical upbringing. And I think the main thing that I've noticed from the last year to this year is that stuff's working a lot better this time around. I think this bass music as a whole has developed into just a love for music rather than just like dubstep kids, you know.
Sure, that makes a lot of sense. I guess it's hard to say. Are Dodge and Fusky fun touring partners? I mean, you're doing a lot of flying, so maybe you're not even, you know, really kicking it with them unless you're in the same terminal or backstage.
Oh no, I mean we're joined at the hip at the moment, man. It's been interesting. I mean, like, they're part of my label, and so I'm part of the management team that manages them. Myself and my partner, Nick Sandler, we co-manage all the acts on the label. So, yeah, like, you know, we're together the whole time, and it's been really nice, actually, just touring with Rob from Dodge and Fusky in this way, because we get to tackle a lot of management issues that would normally have to be done on the phone, but we can just do it right there and then get it out of the way and then have some fun. So it's been good.
Sure. Dodging Fusky with round one.
Are you a native Londoner, or did you grow up elsewhere?
Yep, I'm from London, born and bred. Spent a few years living in, you know, various places. London's where I'm from, and it's where I'm going to continue to be from for the foreseeable future.
So you were, I mean, right in the thick of things growing up there in London, exposed to all sorts of different cultures, not just food, but music too, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, I've been doing this a long time. I think, I mean, dubstep's a very, well, this current wave of dubstep is a very young genre. Like, I go way back before this. I started out as a drum and bass DJ and, you know, had a few drum and bass records out with various people, like, years and years and years ago. And then I went into the breakbeat scene and got quite big doing that for a while. I started touring the States in, like, 2005, doing kind of breaks and electro. And I was doing that for, like, quite a few years. And then I was, like, a resident DJ in Ibiza for a bit, doing kind of more housey stuff and mashup DJing, and then sort of settled now into my dubstep thing, because that's kind of, it's the thing that I'm most enthused by. But I've been through it all, and I've seen scenes come and go over the years. And being in London, you get that a lot, because a lot of the sort of underground dance music that's currently really popular is kind of originated from that place, and it's a hive of activity and creativity.
Did you fall directly into electronic music, or were you a musician at first? Did you play any organic instruments?
My true love musically has and always will be metal. So, you know, when I was younger, I was in a band and had a silly haircut and played guitar and screamed a lot. And my transition into dance music came in the late 90s, when the dark tech step area of drum and bass came through, you know, artists like Ed Rush and Optical and Bad Company, and that mm-hmm. for me, that was the natural move into dance music, because it was the thing that captured that kind of energy and vibe like metal did. And I never really got, I missed the whole UK garage phase and stuff like that, because it didn't appeal to me in that way. It didn't make me feel the kind of raw power and emotion that metal did. But then when that kind of drum and bass started coming around, that's when I got into electronic music, really. And I guess that's why dubstep is so relevant, I think, to me and to a lot of people as well. Like, because if you are into that music, whether you're into, like, hip-hop or metal or anything like that, there is something in that tempo and those beat patterns and those bass lines that kind of evokes the feeling that those other genres gave you, either as a kid or currently even now.
Yeah, I'm the same way. I grew up on metal, and it was funny, for a lot of people, you know, of our generation, it was Trent Reznor crossing, you know, metal fans over into electronic music with his solo stuff and with Spiral and other albums. And it's funny now to see, you know, the people that grew up on metal and then moving into drum and bass and then eventually dubstep, taking the sound back to metal. You see Skrillex and 12th Planet and all those guys on Korn's album, and you see this sort of give and take relationship that the two genres that most people may not even associate with one another have had, going back and forth over the years.
Yeah, I mean, and I think even with the less obvious things, I mean, obviously you've got that. You've got people directly collaborating with metal bands now. That's the most obvious, like, relationship. But I think even just fundamentally, just the whole riff nature of, like, dubstep bass lines and the beat patterns, whether you listen to metal or not, it is very similar. You know, like a metal breakdown with the halftime drums and the big kind of, like, chuggy guitar riff, that's
sure
what a lot of dubstep sounds like anyway. I mean, Excision and I did a track last year, which was basically a metal tune, you know, like, with, like, mixed into dubstep. And I think the two go hand in hand really well. I mean, you can even see it at the parties now. There's a lot of moshing going on. And, you know, the kids that are moshing probably aren't even necessarily metal kids. But, you know,
no, not at all. A lot of them came from hip-hop.
But that's what the music does to you. And I think I have a love-hate relationship with it. I think it's great that music can make you feel that passionate, that you'd want to jump around and hit each other. But at the same time, I don't like to see girls pushed to the back of a rave because they can't get near the dance floor because they're worried that a straight elbow is going to hit them in the face.
Sure. Do you also see, obviously drum and bass is, you know, where you cut your teeth DJing wise,
yeah.
But do you see drum and bass being slipped more and more, just like Moombahton or Electro, more into the productions, the tunes that a lot of dubstep artists are making, since, you know, half of them like yourself came up on drum and bass?
I think, like, for me, the dubstep's been around for a lot longer than a lot of the sort of current generation of listeners of it would realize, and it was in a very different form.
Mm-hmm.
Personally, like, it wasn't really my cup of tea at first, because it just didn't have the energy that I look for in dance music, and it was very sparse, and I did appreciate the talent that it takes to make music like that. But for me, it got interesting when drum and bass producers actually started coming into that and applying the production value that the drum and bass has always had. Drum and bass has, for me, has always had probably one of the highest production values in dance music.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the sounds and the loudness and the way the drums are made and stuff like that is untouchable. So when those people came in and started upping the levels in the dubstep production, that's when I think it got interesting, and that's when I think everything kind of started to get more exciting. You know, I mean, like, some of the early, what would be considered big tunes of dubstep sort of have their stems in drum and bass, like Chasing Status, Eastern Jam,
Casper's
mm-hmm. remix of Where's My Money, you know, it's a remix of one of TC's biggest drum and bass tunes. So when the two started crossing over, I think that's when it got really interesting, and that's when you see, you know, some of the biggest sounding dubstep tunes now are made by drum and bass producers, you know, people like Camo and Crooked, Noisier, DC Breaks. You know, so many people are just doing some killer stuff, and it's because they know how to make other music as well. They've got, like, you can bring your production style from a different genre and put it into this dubstep tempo and come up with something crazy different. And I think that was what happened with me as well. I've been making breakbeat for years, so I've had the sort of fat kick and snare production that not many people were doing in dubstep. So when I started doing it in 2009, it was really quite easy to make a splash, because my tunes didn't sound like every other dubstep producer. They sounded like, I guess, a breaks producer making dubstep.
Sure. I wonder, because you talked about being at the underground UK clubs and really sifting through drum and bass and breaks and watching these new genres grow and develop. So you probably have a sort of far-sighted sense about electronic music, and that, you know, you see dubstep as something that is very now and current, but you saw its genesis, and eventually we'll see something overtake it. Is there anything on the horizon that you can point to, or is, you know, music at this point just so nebulous that you're never sure of something until you're right in the middle of it? You can't really predict what's coming next.
Yeah, I'd agree with what the last statement that you said. I think it's easy for people to, in retrospect, say, you know, talk about deaths of genres and, oh, this came along and then that disappeared, you know, like, garage was huge and then drum and bass came along and then garage went away. Like, it's really easy to talk about stuff like that once it's happened.
Sure.
And I think, like, the difference is now, like, back then when all these genres were spawning, like, it was the way they were spread was very organic. It was through record shops, it was through live performances and DJs and vinyl promos, and there really wasn't much of an internet presence in any of these things. And now, you know, like we said earlier, the world's such a small place with the internet, everything's so interconnected, that, like, I think it's going to be really hard for a genre to just go away. You know, I think the only thing that's going to happen is just going to expand and turn into other genres without even people really knowing it. These days, people consider the tempo 110 BPM to be a genre, you know, like, it's crazy, you know, because, like, there's been people that have been making music at that tempo for years, like breakbeat stuff, like A-Skills and Vent and people like that doing this kind of mid-tempo breaksy stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then you've got this whole Moombahton movement, which basically slowed down an electro tune to 110, called it a new genre with a silly name, and then now, like, you know, you've got people expanding on that, putting the dubstep sounds into that and making this Moombahcore, another silly name. But essentially, like, you know, you could, if you took those tunes back in time a few years and played them to someone, they'd be like, oh yeah, this is like mid-tempo breaks or whatever. Like, I think the genres are so blurred now, it's going to be hard for one thing to just sort of, so you won't ever be able to say, oh, dubstep's dead or this is dead, because all of the different genres are, like, applying the different musical styles from the other ones into itself. And DJs as well are playing all different kinds of music. I don't think there's such a thing as a dubstep DJ anymore. I'm certainly not a dubstep DJ. You know, I play literally everything in my sets, and I think if it keeps going like that, then I just think it's a really healthy state of affairs. You know, I guess you'd probably see different trends. Like, you know, right now the trend is like the bigger the better. People like Skrillex and Night Party have raised the bar on the production front, and you've got this like really loud sort of screechy stuff. I think obviously people will probably, that will hit saturation point at some point, and you know, something kind of new will come along. Maybe it's going to go back to its kind of more stripped back roots, but it's going to be constantly evolving. I think it's impossible to sort of say where it's going to go.
This is Eptic and Abstract Ninja Challenge. Zomboy remix of Foreign Beggars and Skrillex, Still Getting It.
you have to be very conscious of trends and up-and-comers and these new sorts of things, as you are A&R for Never Say Die, your label. Tell me about hooking up with Nick Sadler, and then, you know, when you decided, hey, we need a label.
Yeah, I mean, at the time, I was releasing music under a different name, and I was on a different label, and I'd written a couple of tunes that I thought I really wanted to do a good job of releasing them, and I kind of thought the best person to do that would be yourself, because you've got the motivation to really pump the energy into a release to get the most out of it. So I decided to start a label, and I've been friends with Nick for a couple of years, and I knew that he was hungry and passionate to get into the music industry, so I thought he'd be a good person to do it with. So I decided to start the business with him. And, you know, fundamentally, the label was built on a lot of connections that I'd made over the years, being a DJ and just generally an industry person for a while. So, yeah, we kickstarted it really quickly with releases from people like the Freestylers and the Foreign Beggars, and getting remixes from big people, from pulling in favors, basically, from years of hard graft. that was the beginnings of it. And it's grown so much. And with the thing that's different about it now is that we've really worked on our core stable, and we manage all the acts that we have on board as well. So it's kind of more than just a label now. We consider ourselves just like a media company in a way. You know, we release music from artists that we develop, and we get their brands, and we get them out there as live performing DJs and manage their careers. So yeah, just I guess we're trying to do everything that a major label would do in an independent way, and keeping it credible and keeping it cool.
Yeah, yeah. So we know that the big names you've worked with, as you mentioned, Foreign Beggars and people like Flux Pavilion and Datsik. But we'd like to know about some of these curious figures who were just starting to see more from. I know Zomboy has been on a lot of people's playlists for a long time now, but still remains sort of a mystery. Have you been working exclusively with him, or is he more of an independent figure?
Yeah. I mean, Josh is extremely talented young individual, and he's very young as well. I found him on SoundCloud, you know, about a year and a half ago, and he'd literally only just made his first electronic piece of music, and I heard it, and I was like, the potential in it. Snapped him up instantly, and yeah, he's an exclusive Never Say Die artist, and yeah, I think he's got a very distinctive sound that's developing at an alarming rate. And his next EP is shaping up to be like absolutely huge. So we're really excited about that. Other guys that we brought on, Dodge and Fusky, they were actually our first exclusive signing.
Mm-hmm.
They were the first people that we sort of decided to like go the full hog and, you know, start managing and stuff like that. They're doing great. Eptic is a new kid that we've signed from Belgium. He's 19 years old.
Yeah.
Makes me sick. When I was 19, I was definitely not as productive as he was.
Sure. Habstract is also young.
Yeah, Habstract from France. We just released his EP, or it's just about to come out, I believe, this week, I think. He's on the kind of same kind of tip as Eptic. You know, they've actually worked together. We released a collab of theirs on the album, which has just come out. They're just so young. There's so many young talents right now, and I guess it's just because of how freely available the technology is and how far technology's come. When people my age were their age, our computers had disk drives, you know. But these kids have got MacBook Pros with Native Instruments Massive and Logic and Cubase and stuff like that. So, you know, you can see why it's happening, but it's great to see, man. It's great to see all these kids like putting their energy into making music and you know, setting themselves up with really, really bright futures.
It's funny, you'd give a kid a guitar for his 16th birthday, and maybe he'd plunk around with it a bit, or it would end up in the corner collecting dust. Now you give a 16-year-old a MacBook Pro with Massive, and suddenly 3 years later they're releasing records and going
later,
on
tour. A year later, and they can be out there selling out shows. It's crazy. I think, like, you know, I guess it's a part of a problem with everything as well. Quality, the internet and the freely available technology means that there is just anyone can make music and anyone can get it out there. So there's going to, I think the reason why people get pissed off with genres like dubstep, especially on things like YouTube, is there's so much of it, and there's a lack of quality control because anyone can put it out there and anyone can make it. And, you know, no matter how badly produced it is or whatever, people are going to hear it. So you're going to hear a lot of crap. but like that's something that like as an A&R, like, you know, we try and pick stuff that we think is not throwaway. It's going to have a hook, it's going to have a melody, it's going to make a mark, and you know, and try and say something with it as well, and promote it and market it the right way. And I think that sets us apart from a lot of sort of digital labels these days that will just get sent an MP3 from a 12-year-old who's been making dubstep for 3 weeks and stick it out on Beatport. You know, like we try and approach things a little bit differently.
So you collect these young artists and some of your generation as well, and you decide, hey, we're going to put together a compilation release. Tell me a little bit about the album itself.
Yeah, the album's like it's like a past, present, and future of label. We've obviously got the big hitters on there, which, you know, defined us as a label, like the Flux Pavilion remix of Cracks. You know, it's like one of the biggest tunes ever in dubstep, and it was a career-defining moment for Flux as well. So we've got tunes like that on there, but then we also all kind of got together and wrote 7 exclusives for it as well, just to keep it fresh, obviously, and, you know, kind of show where we're headed. And it was, yeah, it's been a great project. It's been really cool to sort of, like, to know that we're at the stage where we can have that much music to choose from and put together a compilation like this. Like, the mix CD is on CD2, which I did, which is like 35 tracks in an hour. It's kind of a balance between how I would DJ in a club, but also kind of what I think people could sit at home and possibly listen to as well without, you know, having their ears bleeding. So yeah, it's been really good. It's out now. It's doing pretty well. Like, the tune that I've done with Virus Syndicate is currently number 2 in the Beatport charts, up there with Life Party and Skrillex, which is a fine company to be in at the top of a chart, so pretty pleased with that.
Yeah. Well, that's great. We're excited about the album, and you're on tour now, Never Say Die tour with Dodge and Fusky, Tommy Dash, Schism. Thanks so much for being on the UNS podcast.
Thanks for having me.
That's going to do it for this week's episode. Special thanks go to Lauren Fenner with Never Say Die, and of course my guest Schism. He's out on the road now with Dodge and Fusky as part of the Never Say Die Records tour. They're hitting NYC, Winnipeg, Orlando this weekend, followed by stops in Boston, Toronto, San Francisco, Denver, Seattle, Missoula, and more. Get complete tour info at WeWillNeverSayDie.com and grab the new compilation album on iTunes. It features Datsik, Foreign Beggar, Zomboy, Dodge and Fusky, 501, Eptic and Abstract, and of course, more Schism.
Never Say Die.
Please visit theunce.com for news, artist profiles, and tour dates from across the electronic music spectrum. And go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Write us a review. Tell us what you think of the show. If you have any questions, comments, or complaints about the program, you'd like to be a guest on the UNS podcast, or you'd like to sponsor an episode, contact me at anand@theunce.com. That's A-N-A-N-D @theunce.com. Join the conversation @theunce podcast on Twitter. We'll catch you next week.